Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Like a snowball down a mountain or a carnival balloon. Like a carousel that's turning, running rings around the moon. Like a clock whose hands are sweeping past the minutes of its face. And the world is like an apple whirling silently.
And that, of course, Dusty Springfield in Windmills of Your Mind. A song that I just absolutely love, and it just kind of fit tonight's show. So there it was. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hi. Oh, you are here. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, sitting in my little lonely studio here in Star, Idaho, talking to Bobby Jean Bell, my co-host on the phone from her little lonely studio dining room in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hello, Bobby Jean.
Hi, Jim. It's good to hear your voice.
Oh, yeah, it's good to hear yours as well. It's always nice to be heard. I mean, posterity is going to replace us, because eventually we're going to be dead, but these podcasts are going to last forever.
And they're making history by the minute. Yeah.
They truly are. 5 years of history in the making.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I can't believe it.
Think of May 15th, 5 years.
5 years. We've read a lot of books, and we have had the chance to speak with a lot of wonderful writers, haven't we?
We have. And I have to tell you, I'm going to be really frank here. Well, I'll be frank tonight. You be frank tomorrow. But right now, I have to tell you, I have had a bad case of writer's block. I have. And I finally today, figured out a way out of it.
Oh.
So this is what I want to discuss tonight with our guest.
Huh? Yes.
Alrighty then. Well, let's. You know what? Other than the coronavirus, I'm doing pretty good. Of course, Idaho has more cases.
Yeah. Well, we have supposedly, I think, 3 in New Mexico, and the governor is pretty much saying, don't associate with anyone and stay safe. And so things are being canceled left and right, you know, all across the state.
Yeah, and when you say Jim had to go to 3 stores before we finally found toilet paper.
Yeah, and we didn't really need any, actually. He just had it on the list, you know.
Never heard. You can never have too much toilet paper.
Just always have some to show and some to go. And our backup was, you know, it was like we needed some, but I don't know. It's crazy out there. But I guess what'll happen now is everybody will be listening to podcasts and watching their favorite binge TV shows, and we'll be texting and emailing and social media more than ever, because we're not supposed to really go see anybody.
That's true. And I'll tell you what, if anybody out there has Amazon Prime. There is a new series on Amazon Prime called Hunters.
Oh, yes, Hunters.
It's about the Nazi hunters in New York in the 1970s. It's very interesting and a lot of fun to watch. And Al Pacino does a great job.
And you know what else people could do when they're not out anymore is they could read a book.
Or two.
Or listen.
Listen, because we certainly can recommend many.
Read. Turn off that TV and read.
Well, let's get into tonight's guest. Before embarking on a full-time writing career, Pamela worked as an attorney for O'Melveny and Myers LLP and served as a managing counsel for Toyota, specializing in employment law. Why didn't I know that back when I was in business? Anyway, the prolific author of more than a dozen books also writes sexy, sassy, romantic suspense under the pen name Sassy Sinclair. Oh, I got to find this about this. Oh, I got to find this out. A former news writer and associate producer for WXYZ-TV and KCBS-TV, Pamela received a bachelor's degree from USC and also earned graduate degrees from Northwestern and UC Berkeley School of Law. The Compton native is a frequent speaker on the topics of child sex trafficking, bullying, online safety, and pursuing your passion at any age. Visit her website, www.pamelasamuelsyoung.com, and would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Pamela Samuels Young.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Wow, I get applause.
Yeah.
Show up dead finally, so. Pamela, how are you?
I'm great.
Good, good. Well, as you can see, Bobby Jean and I are suffering somewhat, but we're here. I have issues, and Bobby's husband, Jim, has issues, and it's just at that time of the year, I guess.
And we just go forward, right, Pamela? We just go forward anyway.
The only way to do it.
Exactly.
One step at a time, enjoy each day. With all the crazy news, it's great to enjoy the day.
Yes.
Don't your back trail. Always look at your front.
Yeah. Don't look back. Always look front.
Because your past doesn't help you in your future.
No. And a book is really, truly, it is that one of the best places to go to escape. Whatever the craziness is going on around you, grab a book.
That's true. That is actually very, very true.
Yeah.
We're big believers in books. So, and, you know, of course, I'm a writer. And Bobby Jean, one of these days, I'm going to talk you into writing a book. Of which, of course, Tuscany Bay
I know. It's really cool to know I already have a publisher, even though I haven't put pen to paper yet.
And you already got acceptance, so you don't even have to.
All right. So you want to get into Pamela's book and all there, Mr. Christina?
Why don't you give us a little bit of idea about what this book is about?
Okay. Then my latest book is called Failure to Protect. And as a lawyer, I generally write legal thrillers, and they say, write what you know. And that's what I tried to do. I learned about various bullying cases, and they call them, to the chagrin of the mental health people who hate the term bully side, about kids who were being bullied and took their own lives. And I wanted, and there's a growing problem with bullying in our schools. And I learned about the deaths of two little 9-year-old girls in Alabama. I'm a Los Angeles person, and it just took my heart away. And and within 24 hours, this story began to form in my head, and it resulted in a year later with a novel called Failure to Protect. It's and it's about the bullying epidemic. It's about my villain is a school principal who is more concerned about protecting her career than getting to the bottom of a bullying at her school. And it's a mother's fight to for justice for her daughter.
And what a villain she is. She's kind of a bully in her own right, isn't she, Pamela?
Yes, she is. And my principal's name is Darcella Freeman, and I had such a good time writing her.
Ooh,
I like writing evil characters, flawed characters. They're so much easier to write than perfect people, and they're so much more exciting than perfect people.
Oh, isn't that the truth?
Oh, yeah.
I love writing them as well.
Yeah, she captures the reader's attention the minute she enters the minute she's on the page. Boy, we're with her.
not to take away from your book, Pamela, but an observation that I made. Actually, I read a brief that you had. I took it off your website, I believe. Don't you find it that a lot of the time the adult is the bigger bully than the kids?
Absolutely, absolutely. We can, you know, we can all remember those scenes of baseball games when parents are being more outrageous, or, and in many cases, parents who don't, you know, police their own kids' behavior.
Right.
You know, I remember speaking last year at a library, and I was telling people that this book was coming out, and a woman came up to me and was talking about how her grandmother was bullied and how they went to talk to the bully's mother, who basically says, "Well, I can't convince my child to be nice to your daughter." I mean, it was it's amazing what's going on, and it's amazing too that, you know, our kids are suffering behind this. I mean, people have lifelong issues behind being bullied. I have a group of test readers who read my books, and I didn't realize that my cousin, who's now 65, had been bullied as a kid, and he said it brought back memories of him being bullied in elementary school, and I was like, stunned.
Oh yeah, it did for me. Yes, this is a riveting book. This is a terrific read, and although I don't have kids or grandkids in schools right now, for me it also, you write about things that I really don't know about. I didn't know the term a bully side. I didn't know there's a phrase that's used over and over again in the bullying process, which is just go kill yourself. And I take that literally, but I think it has actually another, you talk about that phrase and sort of really what it means.
Well, our kids are saying that to each other, you know?
Yeah.
And it was actually Christmas Day when I was talking to a friend who lives in Marion, Alabama, and she was telling me that she was kind of down about reading news stories about these two little girls that she didn't know about. And so I Googled them, read their stories, and the next morning I put in bullying and suicide and children, and I was stunned to learn, and all these beautiful kids' faces are popping up on the screen, and I'm like, why isn't anybody talking about this? And also to learn that the suicide rate for African-American kids under 12 is twice that of white kids, which is nuts. And why? Nobody knows why. The Congressional Black Caucus is now studying it. But the suicide, I mean, in generally, but if you look at over 12, that's, it's not the same. And so many of our kids, we, you know, as a society, we don't talk about mental health at all anyway, right?
True.
We don't deal with it in adults.
Very
so
little.
We're not
going
to be dealing with it in our kids. So it was a tough topic to tackle, because I wanted to make sure that I want to attract people to the book, because when you talk about bullying and child suicide, people's like, oh, is that going to be depressing? Well,
right.
I tried to wrap it into a really good mystery. And oddly enough, I have 13 books. This is the, and most of them are pretty, they're usually rated 4, 4.5. This is my only book, my first book to have 5 stars on both Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
I noticed that. And I was reading some of these reviews too.
Right. And it's the one that is the slowest selling, I think, because of the topic. But if I can get the book in front of you, I think you'll have a hard time not wanting to finish it.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's been a challenge, because we don't talk about our mental health in this society. We just don't.
Right.
Well, we don't actually very much at all, do we?
Yep. So. Yep.
Well, and it is a captivating read. Of course, we all, you just can't help but fall in love with Bailey. And the characters, each character is just so interesting. And of course, I've now learned that some of them have made appearances in other books. And I didn't really know that until I began to do a little bit of research. So you bring Jenny and Angela back, and you bring Dre. Is it Dre or Dre? How does he say? Yeah,
right,
okay.
Dre. You got it right. Dre, and Angela and Jenny are continuing characters. And Dre and Angela are girlfriend and boyfriend, and Angela and Jenny are kind of lawyer colleagues, and they've handled other cases together before. So they're a pair that I have in a couple of books, and I sure plan to bring them in others. But this is the fourth book in the Dre and Angela series.
Okay.
And I've enjoyed carrying them through different trials and tribulations.
Well, and it is a challenging subject, but you make it very readable. I mean, that's the subject matter, but you make it totally enjoyable. I mean, there's humor and we've got some really hot sex scenes. And so I did also note that now I think have you released a version of a couple of your of different books that are aimed sort of with kids in mind, and you've edited them to be young adult for young
right.
adult readers. Talk a little bit about that.
Anybody's Daughter is about child sex trafficking, and I realized after speaking about, and that's my most popular book. It's about a young girl, a 13-year-old who meets another 13-year-old on Facebook and sneaks off to meet him. And then come to find out he's not a 13-year-old. He's a grown man. And she pulls into sex trafficking. And that is another problem in our society people aren't talking about. And I was getting such interest that I decided to do a young adult version, which is pared down. And it's for available for middle school and up. And then I never started thought about writing for a teen audience, but these topics just sort of, somebody said people were trafficking kids in the U.S. And this was about, I don't know, 2011. And I thought to myself, that can't be happening. Why aren't we talking about it? Okay. Now today we're talking about it, but back then they weren't. So I wanted to write about it. Then one of my law school classmates, I wrote Abuse of Discretion. He was he's a criminal defense attorney, lamenting about having to tell another parent that their child was going to face pornography charges because they were sexting with each other. So they're in possession of child pornography. And I'm like, what? They're charging our kids under the same statutes. I mean, in this regard, the laws have not caught up with technology. Our kids have their phones. They're going through puberty. They're going to do things. But kids were actually going to juvenile hall and being branded sex offenders. So I took that on.
Oh, wow.
And then to learn about this bullying and the suicide epidemic, I wanted to take that on too. And it's always my challenge. I mean, I want to make the book entertaining, but I also want to make it educational without sounding like a treatise or a nonfiction book. I want to sneak the facts in between. Mm-hmm. And I say to myself, if you don't learn something new after reading one of my books, I've failed.
Okay. I'm going to buy that because I think sometimes that's exactly what I say. Mm-hmm. If you haven't learned anything about the Old West by the time you're done with one of my books, I didn't do my job.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. There you go. And I'm going to take a break right here. So right now we have one of our sponsors that is, they've been friends for years. And, let's just let Bobby G tell the story. How about a little word from Out West?
Once upon a time, there was a man and wife. This man and his wife loved serving others through the retail trade. One day, the man said to his wife, "I have learned of recent natural disasters impacting those we love and communities we serve. How can we help?" And his wife said, "I am so glad you're thinking about this. We have a friend who lost his home to the tornado in Tennessee, and we have rancher friends in Oregon facing extreme hardships due to recent floodwaters." And they said to each other, "There must be a way we can help." And a voice said, "Create the Hero Collection at outwestshop.com and donate a portion of its sales every month to a charitable cause." And the husband said, "We can do that." And the wife said, "It's as good as done." And the Hero Collection was created. Find it at outwestshop.com. Make a purchase and be a hero to those in need. And the man, his wife, and their hero customers live happily ever after, because it's always a great day out west.
And we are back. It is 8:17 or 7:17 in the Pacific time, and we are on the phone, Bobby Jean Bell, and of course with our guest for the evening, Pamela Samuels Young. And if you want to call and talk to Pammy, if the phones are working, and Rona, you know this, you can message me and let me know if they are or not. The number in the studio here is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. Okay, we're back. You guys can continue your little diatribe here.
Well, there were a couple of other things that you bring up in the book that I was unknown to me. And one is a drug called Concerta.
Yes.
Is that right? That you want to talk, because again, as a form of an education, this was something that I was totally didn't know about. You want to touch a little bit about?
There have been several lawsuits over the drug Concerta, as that were causing kids to be depressed and to lead to suicide. That was one of the side effects. And as I was searching, I came across that in my research about the bullying and what would happen to kids. And there have been several lawsuits filed regarding that drug. And there are similar drugs that have been said to have the same effect on adults. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much out here
in this
space that we don't know about. But who would think that a drug for attention deficit disorder would cause your child to have suicidal thoughts?
Right.
But that's real.
Well, and in the legal, because you come with a lawyer background, so of course a lot of this book is we have a situation, and then we're gonna go to court. And that was very interesting about what a school would need to not show how they didn't know that bullying was going on and how difficult it really is. I guess I'll put it that way. You show us how very difficult it is to present a bullying case and win it. It was just fascinating, the process, the legal process that you know so well.
Yeah, it's funny. I've read a lot of legal cases, but I tell you, some of the most helpful and instructive things that I read were actually books on this subject. And there was a particular book written by mothers who lost their children. It's called Bullicide in America, Moms Speak Out About the Bullying-Suicide Connection. And these mothers are talking about all the things they did to go to the school to try to convince them that to give their kids some help and to stop this behavior. And they were ignored. So, mm-hmm. I mean, in a legal setting, that the school has to be on notice of the bullying. So it's just not enough to say, well, this is happening. And if you're going to try to sue a school, you're going to have to show that an adult was aware of it or put on notice, either that maybe you came to complain and that kind of thing. But most school districts win the bully side cases. Most parents do not win in those cases. Mm-hmm. It is rare for the parent of a child. And as a lawyer, you have to say that, I mean, it's a tenuous because if a child takes their own life as a result of bullying, if I'm the lawyer for the school district, I'm going to try to say, what's going on at home? What were the mm-hmm. other factors? And it's mm-hmm. not, and it's typically not one factor. One of the things I like about being an author is that you find so many great people who helped me out. And I had a professor at Howard University and another professor of psychiatry at New York University who agreed to read the manuscript mm-hmm. and to really help me with the mental health issues and things of that nature. And I learned a lot along the way. The first thing I learned is that people in mental health don't want to say someone committed suicide. They want you to say someone either took their own life or they died by suicide.
Yeah, they died by suicide.
Feel like
yeah.
You don't say someone committed cancer, because suicide is a mental health issue. So they feel like saying somebody committed suicide is blaming the victim. So I learned a lot. It really opened my eyes. I started this book thinking bullying a child does not cause suicide. Typically, bullying may be a part of a trigger, but it is not. Most kids who are bullied do not take their own lives. So there are there's childhood depression. There are other triggering factors. In my book, the main character, Bailey, had lost her father. And, you know, as we think about ourselves as adults, people, we have deaths, and we send our kids off to school while we may grieve in our own way. And a lot of times our kids don't get the mental health attention they need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the loss of a parent is probably one of the most devastating events in a child's life. The loss of a parent.
an adult as well.
Yeah.
It's devastating no matter how old you are when you lose a parent. Yep. But as a child,
you don't have the coping skills as a young child.
No, you don't. And it pushes you off on a whole new path.
Exactly.
I know several kids when I was growing up that lost parents, both mothers and fathers, and they were never the same after that. They just weren't.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, and you also write into some of these characters how they deal or have challenges dealing with the loss of Bailey, whether it's her teacher or Dree. Or, you know, her mom, we see the loss of Dad, but then we also see how her loss is impacting characters.
Yeah. And grief is difficult. It was so interesting that I, after I finished the book, I started dating a guy who lost his, 17-year-old son to suicide. And he was able to read the manuscript for me. And when he read the chapter about Dre's emotions, he said, "Oh my God, that was exactly how I felt. Mm-hmm. You nailed it." You know, and it's always my goal to I want you to feel, as I'm writing it, I'm feeling the emotions. I'm into my characters, and I'm always hopeful to convey that to the reader.
If you wouldn't mind, ladies, I'd like to switch gears here just a little bit.
Sure, of course.
I was going to ask Pamela, do you beta test all of your manuscripts, or did you just beta test this particular one?
Oh no, always. Because you said you're so close to it. I spent, you know, like almost a year with it, and people will pick up on things that you don't pick up on. So that's always key. I don't have any book that I didn't beta test. And I learned that the hard way, because the first book I wrote, which I thought was a masterpiece, and then have Oprah calling me any day, I gave it out to a million friends, and then nobody, dead silence. Nobody got back to me. And I was like, I'll get to it. And nobody really followed up. And I was telling another friend, I learned that John Grisham got 45 rejection letters, and people told him nobody wanted to read about lawyers. And he continued to write. So I started working on another book. And then a friend of mine said, I'll read the first book, but don't give it to me unless you want me to be honest. But when I got back to her, I'd given her that book and 50 pages of the second book. And she said, "Well, the first book's okay, but the second book is really a page turner." And that was a book that I ended up getting published first. And I ended up getting a 2-book deal, and I rewrote the second book. But I learned a lot in between writing that first and second book from just, I took a 1-day writer's course at the UCLA Writers Program. And the instructor said something that I'd never crossed my mind before. He said, "Take a book that's like yours and outline it." And I took the quintessential legal thriller, The Firm by John Grisham. And I outlined it. I just went through the chapter. Mitch, the law firm wants Mitch to come to Memphis, and blah, 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 blah. And when I finished that whole outline, it was like I had a light bulb moment, because I could see the structure of the story. And that was instructive for me. And the second thing that happened to me around the same period was somebody gave me my first James Patterson book. I am not an unusually fast reader, but I read Roses Are Red by James Patterson in the early 2000s. I read that in 1 day, and I was stunned, because I never read a book. And so I went back and I took that apart too. He had short chapters. There was action at the beginning of the chapter. There was always a hook at the end of the chapter to pull you forward to the next chapter.
Right.
So with those two things in mind, that propelled me, and that helped me find my voice and my writing style.
Wow. No one's ever, Jim, we've never, that's fantastic.
I know.
I don't think any,
we've never talked about this.
That's why you listen to this show.
And you know, it was so funny, because I remember the exact moment when I knew I was finally going to be a published author, because I'd gone through that whole 6 months trying to get people to read the first book. And then I wrote the second book. And then I finally got some positive feedback from my friend, and I'd taken the manuscript to the Office Depot to get it copied, right, to hand out to more people to read, because I finally got some positive feedback and I wanted more feedback. And I remember the woman at the counter walking toward me with the box of manuscripts she had copied. And she, the way she was walking toward me is almost like she was looking over her shoulder, and to the point that she looked weird. And I thought, what's going on with her? She sets the box on the counter. She leaned over and whispered to me, you know, we could get fired for reading our customers' work. But I started reading this and I couldn't stop. Is it going to be a movie? I will never forget that moment. I wish I could find that woman, because that was the first time I said, this is going to happen. Because I had written that first manuscript. I sent it out, trying to get an agent, got nothing but rejection. But I wrote another book. And that, you know, that was, when you look back on it, that was the sort of a turning point. And that gave me the confidence to keep going.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Good job. I think all writers go back and actually, after the second or third book, go back and look at their very first book. And they read it and they go, oh.
Oh, my God, I know. Why was I
writing
this?
How horrible was this? Why would anybody ever want to read this?
Exactly. And I didn't know. Oh, my God, it's so embarrassing. I have that manuscript, too.
It's important that you do, though. It's part of your history. Yep. I mean, it's, you know, it is.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
And I was so proud of myself after those 300 pages. I was just so proud of myself. Oh, it was so bad.
Mine was so bad, I had to go back and rewrite the first book and then re-release it, which worked out great because it turned out pretty good. We're going to take another break right here. And you know, Bobby and I have been together on this radio show now for almost 5 years. May 15th will be our fifth year in the year. And we owe it all to our perseverance and, of course, LA Talk Radio. And we couldn't have been doing this without LA Talk Radio. And so why don't we hear a little bit about them?
Hey, it's Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you just can't find anything worth listening to in that pesky little AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is the biggest and the best in LA and is a .com, so we have it all, from sports to music to self-help to, well, just about anything, including talk. And right now, it's coming right at you. Why don't you sit back and enjoy at www.latalkradio.com.
And a big shout out to Sam Hassan and, of course, Ronan Rosner, our engineer, and the guy who's putting the show together tonight, and all the folks there that have really made it special for us to be on the air. I think Bobby would agree with me.
Oh, yes. Yes, and if you'd like to host your own show, boy, I'll tell you what, you get a hold of them, and you want to have it on LA Talk Radio.
You would definitely want to have it on LA Talk Radio, which, incidentally, we are on LA Talk Radio right now as we are speaking. This is the Writer's Block. We are back with Bobby Jean Bell in Albuquerque and, of course, Pamela Samuels Young. And she's down LA someplace. I don't know. I don't know where she is.
I don't know, but if we were in the studio, she'd probably be with us, Jim.
She'd be probably sitting there looking at us across the table.
Where were you 2 years ago, Pamela?
What a call and talk to
you. You guys got to come back.
Oh, my gosh. I don't think so. I don't think so, Jim. The number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. And again, that number is 818-602-4929. I have a really nice studio right here. I have like three pro mics, headsets, soundboard, mixing board. I got everything right here. But I do miss going into the studio. I really, truly do.
It was always fun. Yeah.
It was always a lot, especially when our guests were in the studio with us. Okay.
Do you want to get back to the process? Yeah, Jim.
You have a major earth shattering question you want to ask?
I don't have a, no, other than the one that, you know, that we missed last week.
Well, yes, we did, because we were so busy talking about other things. Pamela, the name of this program is The Writer's Block. And have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how did you get out of it?
You know, when I first started writing, I made the decision that I wasn't going to experience writer's block because, I mean, I'm a lawyer. I don't say I have lawyer block today and I can't write this brief. So, and because I was practicing law for the first, I don't know, 10 years, more than 10 years of my writing career, I didn't have time to have writer's block because the time was so limited. So if I got an hour to write or 2 hours to write, I used it. So I was really fortunate in that regard. Now, what I do have is what another author friend is called Vic syndrome, B-I-C, butt in chair. It's sort of a more of a malaise where you don't get your butt in the chair in front of a computer to get started. But typically, if I block that time and I sit and get in the chair, I'm good. But now, if I can tear myself away from CNN, or I have things like that where I don't do that. And I also have great places to write. I have an office with yellow walls, and it's just a great warm place to write. I love a little corner of a Panera Bread not far from me where I love to write. I wrote many of my books in Palm Springs. I have a timeshare there. I will leave on a Thursday night, stay there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and write all day. And I have places that really spur me along. So I have more butt in chair syndrome than I have writer's block.
Ah, okay. That makes actual sense.
Yeah.
I never heard it called butt in chair syndrome, but I like it.
No, we're learning all kinds of new things tonight.
So when you're sitting down and you have an idea, so let's say fail to protect. I understand the reasoning behind you had to, you talked to your friend in Alabama on Christmas Day and that put a bug, you know, in you to write the story about the young suicides and bullying. But when you have an idea and you want to sit down, do you outline or are you a pantser?
I'm absolutely an outliner. And I will actually mull over a story for several days and then I'll sit down and write a very short outline, like a first chapter, Bailey reflects on being bullied. Second chapter, Dre takes her to school and she's, you know, and then I see each chapter as a movie scene. So as I'm working through that outline, I am watching a movie. I am building conflict. I make sure every chapter has what I call a chapter question that propels the reader forward. For instance, if the principal and Dre have an argument, like, what's going to happen after Dre leaves the school? I mean, I actually write that on, I'll write a couple sentences about what that chapter is about. And I'll say, what's the chapter question? What is the question that's going to keep that reader reading? And I will spend 2 to 3 months on an outline and I will get it in place where I love it. And oftentimes it takes several twists and turns. The ending may be totally different. And I always know my ending. But it often changes. But I don't understand how pantsers do it. As a matter of fact, that first book that really sucked, that was a pantser. I just sat down and started writing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember spending 6 weeks on a chapter that wasn't even in the book. So I write that first draft all the way through. I don't care how ugly it is. I don't care. It's more like a skeleton. Then I'll go back and I'll fill in the bones. I'll add meat to the bones.
Yeah, Richard Polinelli, and who's my business partner in Tuscany Bay Books and Black Dog Publishing, and I wrote a book together, which I have never done before. And as a writer, the advice I can give to any writer out there, don't ever do it. it's really hard, but it's rewarding if it comes out well. Mm-hmm. But he sent an outline of the entire book. And
right.
And I'm looking at this outline and going, well, that's not going to work. That's not going to work. So when I wrote my sections, I wrote a particular character and he wrote a particular character. And by the time we were done, it meshed really well. But I didn't follow his outline. I just threw it away. I just say, because I'm more a pantser. I know, like you, I know where the book is going to start. I know where the ending is going to go. And I kind of know where the climaxes and the ups and downs and each, you know, in the quarter, half, three quarters and end of the book is going to be. So, I don't have the patience to sit down and do an outline, but God bless you.
I kind of like it. It's like building a puzzle. It's like putting those pieces together. And, you know, I want to make sure I'm looking at, how many times does this character appear? And I want to make sure that I tend to have 4 or 5 main characters. And so I want to make sure I get back to them so that the reader doesn't forget. It's like, I like the outlining part. It's really a lot of fun.
Which brings to another point is character development.
Yeah, absolutely.
Character development is a big part of writing, and we have talked about this, I don't know how many times, Bobby Jean. Character development is like the most important thing in your book. And if you don't have a good character and you haven't developed them well, the reader's never going to get a sense of where you're going.
Exactly.
But I found, and every writer we have talked to, and I think that is without question, every writer we have talked to has said the same thing. At one point in their book, their character takes over and tells them where they're going next.
You know what? I've heard readers say that, and I absolutely believe it. And in my book, Darcella Freeman is such an evil young woman. Mm-hmm. She just takes over and tells me where to go. And I love the situations I put her in. And I think people love a character that you love to hate. And I made that principal somebody that that you love to hate, but that, and I've had, it's so funny, I had teachers also read the book. I had maybe three or four, and I've had them say, oh, I knew somebody like that principal. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Well, and I know that you also belong to a couple of organizations, and I wondered how helpful they are to you as a writer. You're involved with Sisters in Crime and Mystery Writers of America, I think, aren't you?
Wow. Both those organizations were very, very crucial in my development, particularly Sisters in Crime. I'm a lifetime member. And, you know, that organization was started because women mystery writers weren't getting the attention of publishers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's a monthly meeting. I don't go to them as often as I used to, but they have great online resources. They were very, very instrumental in my career, the early days of my career, because it was great to like commune with other writers and go to events and hear from other writers every weekend. I was also a member of a writing group for about 10 years, where we, you know, read each other's work and get together once a month and critique it. That was also very helpful. And I urge any new writers to really, new or old writers, to do that, because you always want the feedback.
We've talked to several writers who were members of Mystery Writers of America, and they all say the same, is that they love the organization. Because it really gives them a lot of information that they can draw from if they have to.
Absolutely. And you can go online and don't not join, for the writers out there, because you might not be able to make a meeting. There are great online resources, and a lot of times they have workshops, and it can be available online, and when you can make a meeting, they're usually going to be very prominent writers. Another thing I recently did, well, not recently, but did a year or two ago, was a Writers Police Academy, where I forget where it was. I'm drawing a blank right now. But Google Writers Police Academy, and it's a bunch of writers who go there and meet with cop. I learned about blood spatter. I learned about arson. I fired
yes,
a gun.
Yes, you did. I saw pictures.
And it was just all those things that you... As a mystery writer, you got that firsthand experience, and it was so great. It was so great.
Bobby Jean, she has pictures on her website of her shooting a Glock.
Because then you get to feel it in your hand, and just, you know, write what you know. So
right, and you learn to correct those mistakes, because in one of my earlier books, I've corrected it. I wrote that somebody cocked the gun, right? And it was a Glock. And so a reader let me know, you don't cock a Glock.
Little cock a Glock.
Right. So, you know, you learn, you live and you learn.
Yeah, you do. So you have got, what are you working on now? Or are you working on anything now?
Well, you know what? I recently, I was watching the news, and I saw that Harvey Weinstein walk out of the courtroom with his lawyer, who was a very gorgeous woman.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking to myself, what character would a woman be who represents, and she does primarily, I understand, guys like the Weinstein. So I have been mulling around the idea of a woman who takes on kind of the worst kind of harassers.
The worst of the worst.
The worst of the worst. So I've got something that I've sort of sketching an outline, but that will probably be my release for later this year. It's just now beginning to bubble up, and I think probably going to start the outlining process. If not next week, the week after. I'm also working on I got invited to be part of a short story anthology, so I'm working on that primarily, but then just going from there.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And is there anything coming out under your nom de plume name?
Nom de plume?
Yeah. Let's see.
My nom de plume, Bessie Sinclair, is she's on hold when I'm trying to write a mystery. So fun. Even though my Bessie Sinclair series are lawyers, right? I do stick to what I know. And but I'm typically not writing two books at the same time. I know people who do that. I admire them.
Oh, I can't do that.
I can't do that. I have to keep my head straight.
Mm-hmm. I can't read two books at the same time.
Yeah.
And some people,
I can't walk in stumps. So there you have it.
That is so true. I don't even do that. You're right.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I try. But it's like, no, I lose focus.
Right.
I just do, you know.
Exactly. Because if a book is really good, I don't want to put it down.
No.
To read something else. I want to stay with it.
Yeah.
And if I put it down, I'm going to put it down. So.
Well, you know, Pamela, I'm going to give you a heads up on Bobby Jean. If you have saucy, racy stuff in your book, she's going to read that section 15 times.
My kind of reader.
And then she's going to ask you about it.
My kind of reader.
I have a feeling a little bit of sassy comes out in your non-sassy Sinclair books.
Yes. Well, she used to tell me, she used to tell me my stuff was salty.
Yes. That was the first time that Jim and I ever talked. And
right.
I said, well, you're that was how I described his language, because I couldn't really swear, you know.
Right. It was salty.
Yes.
Well, anyway. It was still salty.
Yes.
And people still die. But books. So are you going to be going any place? Well, actually, you know what? I'm going to break real fast right now. We're going to have a real quick word from Creative Edge Publicity. So, Ronan, let it rip.
Okay, you've written a book. Now what are you going to do? Well, why don't you give Creative Edge Publicity a try? You see, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. Like an old pair of shoes or an old friend, they work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and they work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals. So Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future. Mickey Mickelson Publicists, and you can find them at www.creative-edge.services.
And just amazingly enough, next week we have a Mickey Mickelson Creative Edge author on the show. So what have you got going on in the near future here, Pamela? Are you going anyplace, doing any book signings?
Going into book conferences?
I'm doing two book club meetings this Saturday, and I'm doing the Mary Church Terrell Literary Society. I'm their keynote speaker on April 11th in Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh,
oh my God.
Just got the
I love that city.
That the LA Times Festival of Books is canceled, so that's off the schedule.
Yeah.
Did that get canceled? Oh,
yeah, it did.
Interesting.
Like you said, all we're going to have time to do these days is sit home and read books, which is good.
Yeah.
I mean, I can always send you some if you'd like to read Westerns.
Oh, come on. I'm open.
Oh, all righty then. Well, you know what? We want to thank you for your indulgence in us tonight, and I hope we lived up to your not so high expectations of the show.
No, it was fun, and thank you guys so much for having me. I understand it's a very popular show, and I'm honored that you included me among some of the greats you've had on your show.
Oh, well, you know what? We are just absolutely thrilled that you decided to join us. And as we all with most of the writers that come on our show, we'd love to have you here. The show is for you, and it's for the new writers to learn what they can learn, and you can give them what you can give them. So we appreciate you coming on and sharing with us all the information that you have.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. And so we'd like to say, email addresses, websites, whatever you want to give out.
You can find me and excerpts of all of my books at PamelaSamuelsYoung.com. You can also reach out to me directly at, again, PamelaSamuelsYoung.com.
Okay, then.
And I love to hear from readers, so don't hesitate.
Oh,
all right.
Well, they do. So, hey, gird your loins. Thanks, Pamela, so much for spending your evening with us.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And next week on the Writer's Block, we have Mr. M.J. Preston, who is an author of a new book called Highwayman. He's a Canadian author. He's also a Mickey Mickelson Creative Edge author. And I'm looking forward to talking to him, and that's going to be with Russ.
Yeah, next week.
Next week you get off.
I know it's the third. It's the third Thursday of the month already. Next week, where is this month going?
Oh gosh, it's just flown by.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, holy crap, it's already like almost April.
Yeah, we have to get through March and April before I guess the virus will take wing. I guess.
I know. And hopefully it'll leave us alone at like in May and June. So
yeah. I hadn't heard that about festival, LA Times Festival books. I have been checking the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival website page like three times a day for the last several days. And I'm not, seems like it's a go. It's the same weekend as Festival of Books, of course, but we'll see.
Well, which reminds me, why don't you give out the dates and stuff about the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival?
Sure. It's April. There are some events that happen on Thursday and Friday, but the Buckaroo Bookshop is April 18th and 19th at the William S. Hart Park in Old Town Newhall in the Santa Clarita Valley area. And I have information about it up on our website. But let me just see here so I don't miss on a list of participants. We have many of our favorites are coming on back. Bob Rill, yeah. Margaret Brownlee, Steve Carver, Eric Heisner, Courtney Joyner, Andrea Kidd, Carol Markstrom, who will also be performing. Lauren Morgan Richards is new with us this year. Katie Ryan, J.R. Sanders with a brand new book. He's been waiting to get published.
He's going to be on our show.
And Janet Squires. So wonderful lineup. And, of course, our good friend David Veal is we're working alongside of David. And if this I'm assuming it's going to go off as planned, so I'll be doing Facebook posts and all of those kinds of things in the near future to let people know what's going on. But yeah,
excellent, excellent. And that's going to be what's the dates again? April what?
Saturday, April 18th, and Sunday, April 19th.
Perfect, perfect. Yeah. Okay, and that's for Bobby Jean Bell, Mr. Russ Avison, and myself, Jim Christina, the Writer's Block, and LA Talk Radio. We're out of here.